A reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 13, The Appearance of Lord Varaha, Text 12. Param Sushasanam Mayam,
Param Sushasanam Mayam,
Chatraja Rakshayanipa,
Chatraja Rakshayanipa,
Bhagavante Praja Bhartur,
Bhagavante Praja Bhartur,
Param,
the greatest.
Shushushanam, devotional service. Mayam, unto me. Shat, should be. Praja,
the living entities.
Born in the material world. Rakshaya,
by saving them.
From being spoiled.
Nirpa.
O King.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
Te.
With you.
Prajavartur.
With the protector of the living beings.
Rishikesha.
The Lord of the senses.
Anutushyati
is satisfied. Translation. O King, if you can give proper protection to the living beings in the material world, that will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the Master of the senses will be very pleased with you. Please repeat. O King. If you can give, proper protection, to the living beings, in the material world, that will be, the best service, for me. When the Supreme Lord, sees you, to be a good protector, of the conditioned soul, certainly, the Master of the senses, will be very pleased with you. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The whole administrative system is arranged for the purpose of going back home, back to Godhead. Brahma is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Manu is the representative of Brahma. Similarly, all other kings on different planets of the universe are representatives of Manu. The law book for the entire human society is the Manu Samhita, which directs all activities towards the transcendental service of the Lord. Every king, therefore, must know that his responsibility in administration is not merely to exact taxes from the citizens, but to see personally that the citizens under him are being trained in Vishnu worship. Everyone must be educated in Vishnu worship and engaged in the devotional service of Rishikesh, the owner of the senses. The conditioned souls are meant not to satisfy their material senses, but to satisfy the senses of Rishikesh, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the purpose of the complete administrative system. One who knows this secret, as disclosed here in the version of Brahma, is the perfect administrative head. One who does not know this is a show bubble administrator. By training the citizens in devotional service of the Lord, the head of a state can be free in his responsibility. Otherwise, he will fail in the onerous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. By training the citizens in the devotional service of the Lord, the head of a state can be free in his responsibility. Otherwise, he will fail in the onerous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. There is no other alternative in the discharge of administrative duty. Translation again. O King, if you can give proper protection to the living beings in the material world, that will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the Master of the senses will be very pleased with you. Om Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Firstly, I have to make a comment that I feel right now that I'm suffering from the Ramaharshana Sutta complex, sitting here in front of all these exalted Vaishnavas. I'm just hoping that nobody has brought in a piece of kusha grass with me. So I will humbly speak in front of you all, or try to be humble in speaking. So it's an interesting verse and purport dealing with administration. For the last few weeks here in Mayapur, the GBC body has been also trying to deal with administration and trying to get it right. Here in the purport, Prabhupada is making it very clear that it's very important that we get it right, because if we don't get it right and we fail in our onerous duty, Prabhupada, even though English was not his first language, has a wonderful ability to choose the right word for every occasion. Another word that always comes to mind, Prabhupada used many, many times in different purports, he would say the stringent laws of material nature. For those whose English is their first language, they will know that the word stringent means there is no flexibility, there is nothing, there's no give. It's just absolutely rigid, like those steel cables that hold bridges together. So in the same way, onerous, it's a very kind of strong word in the English language. It's a very onerous responsibility, very heavy responsibility, very serious responsibility, very grave responsibility. And if you don't get it right, then you're in trouble. We understand, or Prabhupada says in other purports, that the head of state has to accept, I think, 1/6, I think, of the karma of the citizens. So if you're the head of state of India, of 1 billion people, I think, there or thereabouts, if we have some mathematicians in the room, we can take 1/6 of 1 billion. Well, 1/5 is 200 million. So there's probably more than 1 billion in India. So we can roughly say that if you're the head of state of India, you have to accept the karma of 200 million people. That's a pretty onerous responsibility. So it's very, very important that we get it right. And of course, we're given the blueprint, the framework, the model, the strategy, the everything's given. Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnim Mayashistam, Gunakarma Gubhagasha, that he has actually created the perfect administrative setup, the four varnas and the four ashrams. And so that's been created by Krishna. One devotee said to me recently, because oftentimes when we get discussing the subject of varna ashram, it's like another onerous responsibility to even discuss it or to speak of trying to implement it. So one devotee said to me recently, yes, but the Hare Krishna movement, what's essentially the first item of devotional service that you require in order to progress in your devotional life? The first item is Shraddha, faith. So this devotee said to me that, so faith is a very important part of a devotee's life and a very essential part of the Hare Krishna movement. He said there's no place for atheism in the Hare Krishna movement. It would be quite funny if we had atheistic devotees, huh? That's a real kind of rasa-basa. So Krishna tells us that the four orders of Arnam Nashram is the perfect administrative system. So therefore we should, with faith, try to implement that system that Krishna has given us. Sometimes devotees refer to the conversation between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, when Ramananda Roy mentions Varna Ashram as being something to work on, so to speak, and Lord Chaitanya more or less dismisses it. But of course, if we're trying to achieve here to please the Supreme Personality of God at Hari Toshiram, we also learn from Bhagavatam, Ahoitakiya Pratihata, that our devotional service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. I think, certainly speaking for myself, that I cannot claim that my devotional service is uninterrupted and unmotivated. Therefore, dismissing Varnashram at this point in my devotional life is maybe not such a good idea. And Srila Prabhupada also told us towards the latter days of his manifest pastimes that 50% of my work is done, and now I want you to work on and organize and manifest the other 50% of my work. So it would seem we have many challenges in our individual lives as devotees, and also many challenges as the Hare Krishna movement. The Hare Krishna movement, Srila Prabhupada, when he created it, his intention was it was going to be the ideal movement and the ideal society to show greater society how to live their lives. So it's not that we've been free of difficulties and problems. And of course, Prabhupada would tell us that, and we know the saying, that failure is the pillar of success. So we have to identify what is the right way to move forward and retain faith and conviction and enthusiasm to do that, to implement the Varnashram system within our society, so that we can create as perfect a Hare Krishna movement as we can, and then use that as an example to show to the outside world. And here it's very clear that if we don't do that, because in one way or another, we are all leaders. You know, we're all simultaneously followers, and we all are leaders too. And we've been brought to Lord Chaitanya's movement. So therefore we have a responsibility to try to implement and achieve what's being requested here by Srila Prabhupada. Also though, that's on a society level that we have to try to do that. But it's interesting, it's an interesting kind of dynamic between the leaders having to take responsibility, protect the citizens, care for the citizens, make the citizens happy. There's one purport where Srila Prabhupada says, you know, if the citizens are not happy in any given state, then it's the leader's fault if there's any unhappiness, which again is an onerous responsibility. But at the same time, for us as individuals, there's an interesting dynamic that we can't blame everything on leaders. It's not that everything that we do in our individual lives, if we do some nonsense or something that's out to lunch, that we can just say, well, that's not my fault, that's the fault of the leaders, because I'm not happy and therefore I was forced to do this, so, you know, it's the leader's responsibility. There's this verse also in the third chanter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Karmana Deva Netrena, where it's been explained that a combination of our own activities as devotees, and not as devotees, as living entities rather, our own activities, and then under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's what shapes our next life, where we're going in our next life, like that. Actually, that particular section of the Bhagavatam, just on the point of not doing the right thing, both as individuals and leaders, that particular part of the Bhagavatam deals with the hellish planets and what's in store for us. And it describes about the Yamadutas and their assistants and their dogs. I was actually reading it recently, and I was thinking that, again, related to this verse and purport, that because this verse and purport is talking about the ideal society and what we get if you have the perfect leader. You have everybody offering devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It becomes a perfect society. Everyone's in ecstasy. Everyone's in bliss. Because everybody is understanding that Krishna is the supreme proprietor and supreme enjoyer and supreme friend, and he's the supreme of everything. Therefore, if we serve him in a loving devotional mood, our lives become perfect. There's no suffering anymore. Even if it's in this material realm, we're effectively in the spiritual world, and our lives become completely perfect. But if we toss a coin, and the coin lands on the other side, and we have a society where this is not happening, where people are not performing devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then what do we get? So when I was reading this section about Karmana Deva Netrena, and you know, what happens when you go to the hellish planets, I mean, it's so awful, it's so hellish, it's so frightening, nearly as frightening as sitting here in front of all of you. It's so heavy, what's described, that it really shocks you into thinking, boy, I've got to get more serious in my Krishna consciousness. So, look at our society. I live in a Western European city, and although from a facade point of view, you know, things look quite well, you know, the cities are kept quite clean, and there's reasonable order, and, you know, there's a judicial system and a police force to protect you, etc., like that. But under the surface, There's so much that is close actually to the hellish planets. I read an article recently, and I can't remember the figure, but it was an absolutely astonishing figure of something in the region of worldwide, something like 500 million abortions are carried out every year. So innocent, we understand in Vedic culture that there are certain sections of society that should be protected. So children, what to speak of the unborn children, who are even more vulnerable, absolutely incredible. Unborn children, the animals, cows in particular, old people, disabled people, women, etc. All of these people should be protected. And who should they be protected by? Who should they be protected by? This is the most interesting thing vis-a-vis modern society. They should be protected by young adult males, roughly from the age of anything from 15 to the age of maybe 35, 40, when young adult males are in their prime and they're strong and they've got lots of energy and they can actually protect society. You flip to Western society now, right now, and the city I come from, sometimes if I'm walking around it, oftentimes you will see young adult males wandering the streets. And they give nothing but a vibration of fear, intimidation. They just scare the living daylights out of people. And have a guess what? Oftentimes, they're accompanied by these horrendous dogs, these crosses of pit bull terriers with, you know, Alsatians, crossed with a Doberman Pinscher, crossed with a something else. And these dogs are like straining at the leash and their, you know, mucus is falling from their face and they're just waiting to pounce and get somebody. And actually the faces of their owners aren't much better. They look actually quite similar. So it's these young adult males that are supposed to be protecting society. Yet, the very society, the government of those society, here we in the purport, Prabhupada's making clear what the government of society should do, that very government is allowing these young adult males roam the streets and freak and frighten and scare people to death like that. So that's the flip side of the coin. And that's what we actually have right now, in particularly in Western society, but I'm sure it's also, you know, very prevalent in other societies, but particularly in Western society. So this is the responsibility that we all have. We have this responsibility to somehow or another implement an administrative structure, implement it in our society where it's working really, really well. We as devotees, actually, within our society, should be ever vigilant against any form of abuse or intimidation that any devotee, even subtly, is, you know, inflicting on any other vulnerable Vaishnava like that. It's a really key part of our responsibility as devotees to be caring, loving, and protecting to all the devotees that we're connected to. So that's the society that we have to try and implement. And Lord Brahma, he's glorifying Swayamrupa Manu here. And he's glorifying as a really good son because he's following his instruction. And he's going to try to create this ideal society where devotees, where people can flourish and people can, are free to perform devotional service so that they can achieve the ultimate goal in life. He also, though, was disappointed with some of his other sons, the four Kumars, when they actually refused to do exactly the same thing. So again, as a parallel to our ISKCON society, we can refuse to be administrators. We can refuse to do that. But then, if we refuse to be that, to be administrators and protectors, we have to become Brahmins, first-class Brahmins and Vaishnavas, that we can advise and instruct the society that we're in. So that's perfect too, that verse also from the Bhagavatam, Devarshi, Bhutapata, Nunam, Pitranam, that, you know, you can give up your material obligations and anything that's expected or so-called required of you, if by giving it up, you dedicate your life exclusively to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's okay. Of course, when that actually happened, when the four Kumars declined Lord Brahma's offer to procreate, etc., and fill up the universe and whatever else, when they declined to do that, Lord Brahma became really angry, really, really angry. And that's also interesting because anger, just like we're talking about protection and not intimidating people and not abusing people, taking advantage of people, particularly devotees, but everybody actually, every living entity. In order to achieve that, we have to really have our anger under control. It's such an important thing to control our anger. So in this case, Lord Brahma didn't do that. And what happened? What happened was Rudra manifests from Lord Brahma's anger. And he's described as being red and blue. And he came out red and blue, modes of passion and ignorance. And the anger of Lord Brahma was so intense that the personality of Rudra, when he manifested, he just traveled all over the world and he was just destroying everything. Anger is carried through the bloodstream. And when you lose control, when you actually, and I'm sure, hands up in the room, any devotee, since the time they were born to where they are now, so the younger ones have an advantage here than the old ones, from the time they were born to where they are now, hands up anyone who has never become angry. You're all very honest. So, anger is carried through the bloodstream. And I don't know the exact process, so to speak, but I'd imagine once you tip the balance and 50% of your bloodstream or 51% of your bloodstream has lost the battle with anger, you actually then lose control. And that's when we see, and in this case, Rudra, he just traveled all over the universe, destroying everything in his wake. Lord Brahma had to get after him and sort it out. It was a big challenge for Lord Brahma to stop what was going on. In the same way, again, in our non-devotee society, and particularly in Western society, when people lose control, they lose control and all sorts of hellish things happen. They kill people for nothing. Old people get killed because someone kills them simply to take $10 from them, and they just kill the person like that. People out of control. So this control of anger, karma asya, krodha asya, controlling the anger and controlling the senses, it's such an important aspect of our devotional life. And we need to be in control of our senses and in control of anger in order for us to become good Brahmins, good Kshatriyas, good Vaishyas, and good Sudras. We actually need to be in control of those things, again, in order to set the example for greater society. And the goal, of course, Hari Koshanam, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the actual goal. If we ever, that verse I quoted earlier, Bhaktaram Yajnatapasham, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, both in the translation and the purport of that verse, it's described that if you accept that Krishna is the supreme proprietor, the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer, if you're accepting that, because that we're talking about Lord Brahma, let's consider Lord Brahma for a few moments. 12 hours, if I'm wrong here, please correct me, but 12 hours of Lord Brahma's life is 4,300,000,000 years of our life. 12 hours of his life. So therefore, his full lifetime is 311 trillion, 40 whatever else. Huh?
40 billion.
40 billion.
311 trillion, 40 billion. So his full lifespan is 311 trillion years and 40 billion years. We just, you know, we can kind of forget about the 40 billion years because it's got 311 trillion. You know, can we conceive of 40 billion years? I can remember as a little boy, you know, when I was sort of 13, 14, and I can remember lying in my room at night, sometimes I couldn't go to sleep for whatever reason. And I remember trying to understand the concept of eternity. First off, I completely forgot about trying to figure out that eternity had no beginning. I decided, actually, that's too far out. I can't deal with that. So let's deal with the other half of eternity, that it has no end. And there I'm trying to calculate my life. Well, you know, I'm 13 years of age. Okay. Now, boy, when I reach 40, at that time we were talking about the millennium because the year 2000 was sort of a few decades away. And I remember working out that I'd be 38 years of age in the year 2000. I remember thinking, boy, I'll be 38 years of age, I'm only 13 now. Boy, that's just eons away. That's so far into the future. I'm thinking of whatever that is, you know, 17, 18 years, whatever it was. 311 trillion years. That's Lord Brahma's life, and 40 billion. That's his lifespan. And who is Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma simply comes from the lotus stem of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu, there is unlimited Garbhadakshay Vishnus who come from Mahavishnu, from the pores of Mahavishnu to go to all the different universes. So, Mahavishnu, he is but a partial expansion, just a partial expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this Supreme Personality of Godhead, wow, what a person this person is. His position, his qualities, his eternality, everything about the Supreme Personality. So Krishna says in that translation, 529, if you accept that I'm the Supreme Proprietor, Supreme Controller, Supreme Enjoyer, you will engage. And there's another sister verse, actually, which is Etam Dabutam Yogam Cham Mayovetatapada Sovikapena Yogina Yujate Natcha Samshaya, which, if you accept, Krishna speaking, if you accept this mystic power and opulence of mine, you will engage in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So how many of us are engaging in unalloyed devotional service? Unalloyed, another one of these words that Prabhupada uses. I think he got it from the side of a articulated lorry or something, unalloyed steel. You know, but unalloyed means pure, basically. Nothing mixed in, nothing affecting it or contaminating it. So how many of us are engaging in unalloyed devotional service? So if we're not engaging in unalloyed devotional service, then the flip side of that, or the logical conclusion, is that we do not accept Krishna's mystic power and opulence, and we do not accept that he's the supreme proprietor and supreme enjoyer and the supreme controller. We do not fully accept that, because if we fully accept it, he is telling us we will be engaged in unalloyed devotional service. So from that we can conclude that we have much work to do in our devotional life, and we have to continually try to convince ourselves of our position vis-a-vis the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, how great is God, and how vulnerable, actually, is another good word, vulnerable. Prabhupada uses the word insignificant a lot, so insignificant, but vulnerable, precarious, our precarious, vulnerable position in this material world if we're not taking shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Once, in the 1970s, there was a dictator. I'm sure we have some South American devotees sitting here today. There was a dictator in a country called Chile, and his name was Augusto Pinochet. And it is alleged, we have to be politically correct in our 2008 society, just in case that he was set up. It is alleged that, as with most dictators, he wasn't the worst, of course. We had, of course, Joseph Stalin in Russia. I'm sure we have a lot of Russian devotees here today, who allegedly killed 35 million people in order for him to retain his power base. 35 million people he killed because he wanted to be the controller. So he was pretty bad. I mean, in that sense, our dear Adolf Hitler was like just a little, little puppy. He didn't do many. I mean, he only killed 6 million. You know, I don't know how many Augusto Pinochet killed, but I just want to talk about briefly how he killed them. What his so-called people that he thought were a threat to him. What he would do is he would fly them out in big aircraft carriers, these big airplanes that can hold tanks and all that kind of stuff, massive things. And he would put thousands of people into these airplanes, and he would fly them out over either the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean. And when the plane was in the middle of nowhere, the doors would open, and all of these people would be pushed out, and they would simply be falling to their death. When they were falling to their death, you can be sure that their minds became focused, and the atheists suddenly became theists, and the theists suddenly became at least Kanishka Adhikaris, if not more. And they would have been praying to God, you know, please forgive me for all my sins, and please protect me, please look after me. Because the mind has suddenly been focused, because they're falling very quickly and very soon to their death. I don't know, usually 22,000 feet, so probably takes about 10 minutes, I'm not sure. Something like that. But actually, in the every single one of us in the material world, we have been pushed out of that airplane. We are now falling from that airplane. And it's just a matter of minutes or hours or whatever it is that we're just going to go black. That's our situation. We're falling out of the airplane. However, while we're falling out of the airplane, we have a tendency, when we meet up with someone on the way down, to start a conversation with them, something along the lines of, oh, how are you today? You know? How are you feeling? I'm feeling pretty good, actually. You know, I just bought a lottery ticket and I won $500. So personally, I'm in good spirits. You know, my daughter just got married. Seems like a nice boy that she got married to. So I don't have any more family responsibilities. I'm going on a long holiday now with my wife, you know, to the Seychelles, as soon as I learned. You know, and we have all these kind of conversations every day of the week. But actually, you know, we're falling from an airplane, just about to go splat like that. So that's why. We saw in the play the other night, Queen Kunti praised the Lord Krishna, that please let these calamities come again and again and again and again and again and again to remind me of the precarious, vulnerable situation that I'm in this material world. And don't let me, for whatever reason, be distracted from what the real goal of life is. And the real goal of life is to forever be performing devotional service. In this age, we know that the easiest way, and visiting here to Mayapur is so wonderful. You just never stop hearing the holy names, except right now when I'm talking, so I apologize for that. But nearly all day long, from, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning in the Samadhi auditorium, and then the morning program here, and then all day long you hear the devotees chanting, or there's kirtan going on, and the harinam at 3 o'clock, and right up actually to quite late at night when you're trying to take rest, you know, there's still kirtan going on somewhere, and people are chanting. So it's so glorious that we're constantly hearing the holy name. And the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, again, we have to have faith that this is the best way for us to overcome all our anartas, for us to become free of all these anger and lust and all these different bad qualities, and to find us to be able to eventually reach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Maha Mantra, it's not of this material world. It descends from the spiritual world. It's spiritual. It descends from the spiritual world. And it comes in, it enters our ear when we're chanting. From our ear, it goes directly to our heart. And from our heart, it immediately starts cleaning the heart of all these unwanted anartas that we have. And the amazing thing is that this chanting and focus on the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is consistent throughout every religious tradition in the world. In the Bible, we're told that from the rising of the sun to the setting of the sun, one should call on the names of God. In the Quran, we're told, of all names, the name of God is the best, and one should call on them to be saved by them. And of course, in our tradition, there are just unlimited references to the holy name, not least Harinama, Irakevalam, Kalona, Shiva, Shiva, Gati, Anyata. But in this age of Kali, the only means of salvation is to call, chant, meditate on the names of God. Hare Krishna, thank you all very much. Shiva Prabhupada, peace!